Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you on this Wednesday, September 25th. It's a good day and a good week as we talk about God's gift of marriage this week. I've enjoyed the conversation so far, and today's topic promises to be a good one as well. As we're going to talk about looking for God in the hard places. How does God use those tough times, those difficult times in marriage and parenting? So we're going to talk about that with Jill Hastad, DCE and Director of Family Life, Family Ministry here in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Go to the sponsor section and click on the CUW logo, and that'll take you to their page. You can learn about all the great programs that Concordia University, Wisconsin has to offer, including their accelerated adult learning programs and education centers around the country, including one right here in St. Louis. If you'd like to join the conversation today, maybe you have a story or a question concerning marriage and how God uses those tough times, those difficult times to shape us. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by phone. You can call us here in the St. Louis area at 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, give us a call at 1-800-730-2727, or maybe you'd like to email your question or comment, and you can do that. Just send an email to family@kfuo.org. Joining us by phone today is Jill Hastad, Director of Family Ministry at Zion Lutheran Church in Belleville, Illinois. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you with us, a fellow DCE. And for those of you who aren't familiar with DCEs, we are Directors of Christian Education. We had a little story about that not too long ago on our weekend show called World Lutheran News Digest about what DCEs are. So, Jill, what is, from your field, you're a Director of Christian Education, and your specific title at Zion is Director of Family Ministry. What I know what a DCE is, but what is a DCE do, and what are they?
Well, my role at Zion is very much in line with the typical DCE ministry, which is to really look at lifelong education, cradle to grave kinds of things that you get to do in a church. And so in family ministry, my role has very much been for 20 years to make a family ministry part and parcel of everything we do here. And of course, the church already does that in so many ways, but we really keep it in the forefront, and we've got a Lutheran school, and we try and think of what's the impact on families, how we can encourage them and support them better.
Excellent. So lifespan educator, I think, is the term that I've heard used to describe us and the work that we do. And that really, I guess, comes from, you know, baptize and teach. We support that teaching aspect of the church in so many ways. And so working alongside pastors and the work that they do. And so making sure that the word is placed in the hands and spoken to and placed in the hearts of people of all ages, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, tell us, you said at Zion you work with families. How long have you been at Zion?
Actually, I celebrated my 20th year just recently here, and so really had an opportunity to see kids grow up and become parents, and some people that I've worked with as teenagers when they were in youth ministry, I'm now working with as young parents or even parents of teenagers themselves.
And you do a lot with parents. I know you have an upcoming program here that my wife and I are looking at for parents. Just a brief blurb about what that is.
Well, I am a independent facilitator for Love and Logic, which is, there's a website, www.loveandlogic.com. But Love and Logic is an approach to parenting that gives parents more tools for their toolbox, basically. It's really designed to give you skills that you can use in many different situations so that you don't have to use anger, lecture, threats, or warnings. You can instead hold children responsible for their behavior in ways that helps them think through their behavior. And so parents who use it over the long term really get some very responsible children who can think through the actions of consequences of their actions.
But anger, lecture, threat, and warnings are so much easier to just pick up right away, right?
Right. Well, we tend to go to the tools that were in our parents' toolbox, mm-hmm. and some of us had parents who had more tools than that. But
the readily accessible tools.
That's right. If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Well, and that brings us into our topic for today. I have worked with you a little bit before. Our paths crossed years ago, back I believe at a camp and retreat center in upstate New York, and you were working with a family retreat or a family servant event, I believe, up there at Pioneer, and working with families. It's been a while, I believe, and I've kind of followed you along the way and seen the work that you've been doing with families. And when I started thinking about this show and particularly marriage, and started talking with you about it, and said, what would you like to talk about? And you said the how God uses those difficult times, those tough times, to shape us, to sanctify us. Why did you choose that topic?
Well, sometimes I think we think that the hard times aren't supposed to come, as if I go into this with the mindset that I'm going to work really hard at it, that I'm a good Christian, that, you know, if I've been fortunate enough to in the partner God gives me to also have a great Christian partner, that if we surround it in prayer and are intentional about the word in our home, that everything's going to be perfect and we just aren't going to have problems, and because that's really for people who don't do it right.
I laugh because I've had that same way of thinking too.
yeah. I expected excellence of myself, and I thought I had been so intentional that I just really thought I might be above all those problems that other parents were having or that other marriages were having. And it is a little different than that when you get into it. For one, you're living in close proximity with somebody who intentionally or unintentionally is a great mirror for you, reflecting your sin right back at you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that could be your spouse. It could also be your children.
Sure.
And, you start to see who you are, and it's a bit convicting to realize your own shortcomings and to experience some real failure sometimes.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that a little bit earlier this week in the show, and it was also in our wedding sermon that when two people marry, they're marrying a sinner.
Yeah.
You're marrying a sinner, and so what happens when you put two sinners together? Well, then you have more sin.
Yeah.
And as you've pointed out, that you're putting up a great mirror that shows each other your sin.
And the tendency is to really see the other person's sin first, and to focus on that. You know, what is it my partner is doing that is not fulfilling me? And, of course, any great counselor will tell you have to change yourself first.
Mm-hmm. And that usually kicks in how fairly early in the marriage, probably, when you start thinking, and maybe even before a wedding, you know, that may kick in. Oh, well, if they could just change this.
Yeah, I think it kicks in faster for some people and then others. You know, it really is so individual. I mean, I really started to see where I needed to work. It was in our marriage, was really after we had children, because their children just put more stress on our relationship, and so the cracks started to show. And I mean, I have a great husband. I've been truly blessed with that. And it wasn't anything we weren't both intentional about working on. But one of the first things we faced was, having a new baby in the home. And I was totally baby focused and, not even remembering that I was leaving my husband in the dust there. And so he, was just wonderful about arranging a babysitter and taking me out, and we had a great conversation. And, there was room for three in the marriage, not, you know, I didn't have to be totally child-focused, which is not healthy for children in the long run either.
Sure, yeah. Thinking about doing a whole week on that topic, too, about children who have always been, whose parents have always focused on them being special and well, what that results in later on.
Yeah, I get a whole bunch of those in my parenting classes. but actually, you know, that sounds like a condemning statement, but we do have a tendency to... You know, we just want to do it right, and we just want to love our kids, and we just think if we love them enough and serve them enough and provide enough for them, that somehow everything will be fine. But then sin rears its life, rears its ugly head in their little lives, and they're selfish, and they take advantage of us, and they manipulate us, and we realize, oh my goodness, somebody has to be in control here.
Oh, I can tell already at the 4 a.m. feedings when my precious little son, who I love and adore, starts, you have about a 30-second warning.
Yeah, parents ask me all the time, when does discipline start, or when should you start worrying about how you discipline children? And my answer is probably about the first time they spit beets at you.
Well, our newborn is 3 weeks old today, and he gives you some warnings about when he's hungry, but if you don't heed those warnings, then you're going to have pretty loud screams on your hand in just a few seconds if you don't heed those, which makes for an interesting relationship, but understanding where he is developmentally and those things obviously makes it a little bit easier and a little more patience with him, but...
But it's not too long before they're fighting you at the diaper table. You know, they don't want to be changed or they want to squirm. And
oh, he's already there.
Yeah. And so there's techniques for dealing with that. But you know, the main thing is at some point some big problem is going to come. And it might be because of poor parenting, or it might be because you're not focusing on your spouse, or it could be external to you. It could be a major illness or some bigger problem in your family system, but something's going to come. And then you have some choices about how to deal with that.
A lot of choices ahead of us, I'm sure, with this little guy.
Yeah. But, you know, it's... I think with little guys, you just love them. You don't have to worry about spoiling them at this age. You just meet their needs, because that's the most important thing to do at this stage, is just to meet their needs.
And that's what they said to us at the hospital. Like, really, you just can't hold a newborn too much.
Right, that's right.
And I agree.
And then later on, you know, the 2-year-old who will be stomping their feet, you know, and saying, I hate you, because you wouldn't let them do something they wanted to do. But, you know, that hurts your heart the first time that happens, because it's not your picture of what you thought parenting would be, or the first time you have a fight with your spouse, and that hurts your heart because you just didn't think you'd ever fight. And then you have to learn how to fight fair, or what is a way to deal with conflict in healthy ways, and what are the unhealthy ways to deal with it. And, you know, there's, I think those times when God has shown me a mirror that not only hurts my heart, but makes me see my own major flaw, is when I have to, first of all, confess my sin. To God, but also maybe to my partner, and part of that is accepting the first that it is my sin, and then asking through the power of the Holy Spirit for help to repent, to go in a different direction, and that turning in a different direction, that's that sanctification part of life. That's living out my vocation, my calling as a wife, or my calling as a mother, or my calling as a worker in the real world.
What a great summary of Christian vocation. As you pointed out in our conversation beforehand, that Luther describes it as the masks of God. How do those, what are some of those masks? You've pointed out your masks, how God has given you vocations. Sometimes we think of vocation as singular, but you've pointed out clearly we have multiple vocations. God has called us to serve in multiple vocations as spouse, as husband or wife, as mother or father, as child, as worker in the rest of the world. How does God use those masks, and how do they relate to one another?
So, here's a mask is something you hide behind, and that's one way we think about it in our current world. But in terms of Luther's concept of the mask of God, it's that God is hiding in the details of life. We may not, because of our sin and our separation from God, we may not see Him, but He's there. And so we think in terms of life kind of just running on its own, and, God's in heaven or God's inside of us, but life's running on its own, when in reality, God's there. He is with us in the details of life. He's caring for us in the good times, but also in the difficulties. And as we seek His guidance in the Word and through the correcting and encouraging that happens or should happen within family life, Christian family life especially, that's when He reveals Himself to us. So, for example, you are a parent who's struggling with a teenager who's making bad decisions, and your heart's breaking over that, and you're trying to figure out what to do. And you can even maybe see some of their bad decisions being a result of some of your bad decisions and how you parented or didn't hold them responsible or let things go when you shouldn't have. And it's never too late to confess your sin. But once you see it, then sometimes the starting point is simply to say, God, I need you to take my heart of stone, right from Ezekiel there, I need you to take my heart of stone and turn it into a heart of flesh. I need you to keep showing me that I don't have to do this on my own, that I don't have to be strong here, that actually in my weakness you can be strong, and that's where the heart of flesh comes. And God can turn situations around when we stop trying to do it ourselves.
And when we... Another way of looking at that, when we stop trying to be the perfect, yes, we know that God expects perfection, but we know that we are never perfect as God is. It's Christ who's perfect in us. When we can, it's Christ who was obedient to death, and that's the obedience that God sees on our behalf, and that's what sets us free from our failure, from our
yeah, and we. It also gives you a much, much better heart for other people, because if you expect perfection of yourself, you tend to be arrogant, I think, in looking down at other people and saying, well, why can't they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps and get their act together? And in reality, people are dealing with a great deal of pain in their journeys. The farther you get into the journey of life, the more you get to experience that. And so I think sometimes the reason God breaks our heart of stone is just because that makes us so much more effective in loving other people.
You bring up a really good point, especially with the bootstraps and analogy. It's the same gospel, the same Jesus who justifies us is the same Jesus who sanctifies us. And as Lutherans, if we go with the bootstrap theology, then we're not. That's not what we confess as Lutherans. That's
right.
A whole another set of. And so that same gospel that is divine monergism, that God is doing the work that saves us, is also the same divine monergism, the same God, the same grace that sanctifies us.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely
who makes us. So when we're set free, when we are freed from that sin and able to to see God's work, God's grace at work in us that sanctifies us. You're so right. Then we're more compassionate toward the other person who is a sinner as well.
Yeah, and they see it in us. They they see it in us. And you know, I remember thinking, I was a pretty successful Lutheran school teacher who had often been called to schools to handle the worst discipline class that had ever been through that school, and you know, I had a reputation for dealing with discipline pretty well, and I, when I started to have my own kids, I thought, well, shoot, I can handle a class of junior high kids. This is going to be a snap. Oh my goodness, the Lord had some surprises in store for me, and one is that handling my own children was so different because I had so much more. I mean, I always loved my students, but it was a totally different when your own child was pushing your buttons. Yeah. So, I thought to myself, well, I'll never have a kid who screams in church, or I'll never have a kid who, is sitting in the grocery cart, misbehaving the whole time I'm walking through the grocery store.
Well, see, we've done the opposite in our household. We've set our standards really low. We know that our child is going to be that one screaming and then throwing the fit in the grocery store. We figure if we set our standards really low, our expectations really low, then we'll just be pleasantly surprised all the time, right?
That's right. And it's probably a better approach than I, because I was mortified.
I think our fears before Oscar was born is that that we would be the really strict parents, and that remains to be seen down the road. But I don't know if that'll be the case. We'll see. But I don't know if we'll be the really strict parents. But I don't think right now we have those really high expectations that he's going to be the perfect child. We know that.
Well, as Christians, we shouldn't. We should expect original sin. But it's, you know, the other thing is firm is different, I think, than how we think of strict. But and there's that old saying, rules without relationship leads to rebellion, and that's one of the things I like about the Love and Logic parent material, is it really helps you learn how to be firm, but not brutal.
As I've heard it described, that the Love and Logic approach, it really lets the actual consequences of the situation do the teaching, while the parent can be empathetic.
Right. So, interestingly, this is good for marriages as well as parenting. But one of the things that Love and Logic program teaches is to lead in all situations with empathy. And the empathy allows a person's thinking to move from your brainstem, which is fight or flight and emotion, to your frontal lobe, where you have rational or logical thinking. So when my husband and I were both learning Love and Logic, we laughed because we started using it on each other. And in situations where we were in conflict, or there might be conflict, we started leading with empathy. And instead of getting defensive, we'd say, I'd say, oh man, that had to be a tough thing. And so immediately his thinking went from emotional to, okay, I'm being heard. and he was doing the same with me. And occasionally we'd say to one another, don't use that Love and Logic.
That's fine for the kids, but don't use it on me.
Yeah, that's right. But the whole idea of leading with empathy first with children, and then letting the consequence do the teaching, is important, because you feel bad. Your child fails a spelling test and they come home. And my way of dealing with that might have been originally, well, okay, you're just going to be grounded this weekend, and we're going to study three times as hard, and you're going to do better next time. When instead I could just lead with, oh man, that's got to feel bad. That's got to be a little embarrassing when you missed words you could have known if you had studied better, and then go into problem solving. Well, what are you going to do about that? And let them work through the process of being responsible for their own life and their own work. It takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quick and dirty, but it is a helpful thing. But you know, back to this whole idea of difficulties. So, you know, if I remember a time when we didn't have air conditioning. We were a young married couple, and we had a box fan, and the box fan stopped working. And in my family, my dad could fix up everything.
Sounds like a good story. Hold that thought. Okay. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to finish that story and talk about how the mundane things, the everyday things, make a difference. So stick around right after this break. We'll continue with Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The realities of life for staff inside abortion mills can be described as revolting, disgusting, and even satanic. I'll word this carefully, but it's important you know what goes on so you'll be motivated to pray for them. Those coming out of the abortion industry tell of playing catch in the hallways with their tiny victims, calling the freezer where they're stored the nursery, and even kidding about making cookies in shapes of babies covered with red icing for the protesters outside. These are desperate coping mechanisms and evidence Satan has a firm grip on their hearts. But the blood of Christ is more powerful than the devil. So please join me in prayer that the Holy Spirit will enter their hearts. Many have escaped Satan's grasp. Let's pray many more will get away.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
On the next Focus on the Family, Grove Norwood's 4-year-old daughter was tragically killed by a hit-and-run driver. That driver was one of Grove's closest friends. Instead of letting anger imprison his heart, he chose to forgive. It's a profound story on the next Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Weekdays at 9:30 on KFUO.
When your church, school, or organization is planning a special event, let KFUO help you get out the word. We can promote your event in the KFUO Datebook. Give us a call. Tell us about the event, where it will be held, the date, and the time. When your event's in our datebook, it's announced several times a day. Call us and get your event broadcast on the radio. It's a public service of Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Martin Luther once said that the devil, the originator of sorrowful anxieties and restless troubles, flees before the sound of music almost as much as before the Word of God. Music is a gift and grace of God. Here at KFUO, we believe that. That's why we're bringing you great classical music and sacred classics online at classic99.com 24 hours a day. Check us out, classic99.com, a musical ministry of KFUO Radio.
U.S. Senate Chaplain Barry Black is asking God to help Congress pass a budget before the federal government's funding runs out Monday night.
As the American people experience jitters because of an impending government shutdown, we look to you.
Hours before Texas Republican Ted Cruz began a filibuster in opposition to President Barack Obama's health care law, Black asked God to
give our senators the wisdom to know what is right and the courage to do it.
Put another way, Black asked God to
give them the backbone to go through the doors you open.
Cruz urged his fellow senators to oppose moving ahead on a bill that would fund all of government except Obamacare to prevent Majority Leader Harry Reid from stripping the health care provision from the bill. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for joining us today. It's a good day here on Faith and Families. We're talking about marriage and how God uses the tough things, the hard places in marriage and parenting to shape us, to sanctify us. And so we're talking with DCE Jill Hastedt, Director of Family Ministry at Zion Belleville. And so it's good to have you with us, Jill. Before we went to break, we were talking about a story from your family. You were talking about having a box fan. I remember that being the last thing we talked about.
Yeah, it was one of those times when God gave me a good picture of my expectations needing to change. And what happened was my husband, we were young, fairly new, still in the whole marriage game, and the box fan broke. And it was the only box fan, and we didn't have air conditioning, and so I just figured he would fix it, because my dad fixed motors and box fans, and I figured all guys came knowing that. And so he's looking at it, and he says, well, what should I do? And I said, well, I guess you should take it apart. So he took it apart, and he couldn't fix it. And I said, I think I said something really stupid, like, well, my dad could fix a box fan. And he looked at me and just very calmly said, I'm not your dad. And for some reason, I don't know what it was, one of those moments, maybe frustration or whatever, that made me cry. It was not anything, you know, designed to hurt my feelings, but when all was said and done, I realized, oh my goodness, you know, we need to come at this marriage thing together, not expecting each other to fill the roles that we saw other people fulfill in marriage. Mm-hmm. But to figure it out as we go. And I'm not going to love you because you can fix things, or because even because you pick up your socks, or even because you help me make the bed. Whatever comes, I'm going to love you anyway. Not because love, but anyway, love is how I've heard Gary Thomas, who's the author of Sacred Marriage, talk about that.
So there's a difference between, quote, because love and, quote, anyway love.
Right. So because love says my love is conditional. I'm going to love you because you do these things for me. Mm-hmm. I'll love you if you're an amazing husband. I'll love you if you remember to appreciate me. I'll love you if you give me gifts. I'll love you if you hold me when I'm sad. Then essentially I'm loving you like an unbeliever. Because it's that Luke 6:32-36 passage where it says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? In other words, in marriage, part of the gift that God gives us is the opportunity to practice loving somebody even when they're not meeting our expectations, just as God loves us. He loves us anyway. We can't do a thing for him that could make us love him love us more or him love us less, and he just loves us, and his gift of love and forgiveness and grace to us is something that we can bring to our relationship, a commitment that I'm not going to love you because you do things for me, or I'm going to love you anyway, no matter what, even if you can't do anything for me.
Sometimes it's even in spite of.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I'm not saying you should take everything, or if we're talking about substance abuse or other forms of abuse, I'm not saying that. There's different, but in a basically healthy relationship, it's this commitment that it's really a sacrificial commitment. I am there to love you no matter what. I'm not expecting you to make me love you.
We're talking with DCE Jill Hastedt today, Director of Family Ministry at Zion Lutheran Church in Belleville today, about how God uses the hard places, the difficult times in family life and in marriage and parenting. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so. Give us a call here in the St. Louis area at 314-821-0850. Or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can send an email to family@kfuo.org. Jill, how does God use the mundane things the everyday things. You know, in our household, it's bottles and diapers. It's bottles and swaddles right now.
Yeah. And in my house, we've, you know, I've got young adults and I've got older adults who depend on us too. And I think there's chores, there's lists of things to do, but life can be boring and tedious and tiring sometimes. And but the thing is, it is also this is where vocation comes in. What I do to care for my family, to care for the people I love, to care for the people in my church or my neighborhood, that is God working through me to care for the world. And that's His chosen method. When I have a health need, I go to a doctor because God has chosen to heal me in that way. Can He work in other ways? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, He sure can. But my sense of an understanding of my vocation, sometimes it's if I understand that even these really tedious, boring things, the laundry that I have to do or the dusting that has to get done, that's still God using me to care for my family, then you begin to see the sacred in the mundane.
It's so interesting how God uses those simple things, those mundane things, even when it comes to grace and faith. We see that in the sacraments, how God takes plain old water and attaches it to His word to give us saving faith, to give us that forgiveness of sins. Takes wine and bread and attaches His word to it. These simple earthly things that are just plain old ordinary mundane things, in a sense, to give us faith. He uses plain old ordinary family life to provide for our earthly needs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, you know, when the hard times comes, by the grace of God and with His help, that's where we too say, where is God in this? Mm-hmm. But also, how can I serve God in this? And how can I be a blessing in this? Or sometimes when you're too overwhelmed because the situation is too great, how can I simply be served by other people whom God is using to help me mm-hmm. in this situation?
Who has God placed in my life to provide for the needs that I have? Who has God placed before me so that I can recognize those and be thankful for those?
Yeah, count them as blessings. And you know, for me, being in church work, which meant that I was always hundreds or thousands of miles away from my biological family and what might have been my normal support system, it was God's people in the church who I had friendships with and relationships with, or sometimes just stepped in out of the blue and did amazing things. Like once when our oldest child had a freak accident and broke his femur, and he was in a body cast, and we needed to get to the doctor, and we had a Camaro, I think, at the time, with a two-door. We couldn't even use our own car to get him to the doctor, and one of the church members drove by and said, "Hey, heard you got to get your little guy to the doctor, and how'd you like to swap cars? I'll drive your Camaro, and you can drive my van." And I'm thinking this is a great swap. I'm not sure my husband thought it was a great swap. but the point was, it got the job done. You know,
sure.
People brought us food. And, you know, when my kids were sick, and I remember a time that everybody in the house had the flu at the same time, and I couldn't call my mom and say, "Can you come over and take care of us?" Mm-hmm. But a dear friend from church came over and said, "You know what? I'll take care of everybody. You guys go to sleep." And basically she took care of everybody in the household.
And we've seen that recently too. The Lord has blessed us abundantly with family and friends from, you know, from church, and who in the past we never would have gone and taken a nap when somebody came over to visit. But now That seems to be the regular case, that someone comes to visit and they say, oh, why don't you guys go take a nap? We'll hold the baby. And we willingly accept that offer.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like this whole guest coming over, bringing us meals and then letting us take a nap. I like this thing.
That does go away, you know.
Oh, it doesn't continue on? I thought this was a regular thing. No, and Grandma and Grandpa are happy to do that too. Don't worry. We'll come hold the baby. You guys go take a nap. So until he starts screaming, they haven't really seen him scream that much yet. So, but today they're probably in for it. they get to experience that today. We talked earlier about the relationship between husband and wife and being forgiving. How important is confession and forgiving one another and on a regular basis? How important is that in marriage?
Well, I think in a healthy marriage, it's everything. I think it's about not stuffing conflict down and pretending it doesn't exist. It's about hearing the things your partner has to say, even if they're hard things for you to hear, and working really hard, maybe not to be defensive, but to look for the truth in it. And then sometimes it's the opposite. It's figuring out, how do you tell your partner something that you need to tell them, but you don't want to hurt them, or you really want them to hear you, but you're trying to figure out to say it in a way they can hear it. I mean, all of that is the nitty-gritty of life. And I think first, if you come with humility, you know, looking at your own sin, and confessing that to another person, you know, or just being able to say, you know, I can see that I did this, that I didn't listen to you at a moment when you needed to be listened to, or I added one more thing to your plate when you already had too much on it, and I just want you to know that I saw that, and I'm sorry for it, and I'm going to try and do something different. Will you forgive me?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that matters, just acknowledging our sin to one another. It matters a lot. And then speaking those words of forgiveness and then letting go. It's really important.
It is so important to I think it's important to use real words of forgiveness.
Yeah. You know, and that's not something many of us have seen modeled in our life. So if you're trying to do something different in your marriage, in your Christian marriage, that you never had modeled for you in your life, then it really is helpful to be very intentional about that, and to have conversations about this. What does this look like as we are ministering to one another, speaking the truth in love to one another, reminding each other of forgiveness, not just personal forgiveness, but forgiveness by Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, in just a second, I want to see if you have any more stories or more examples of how God uses those hard times. So I don't want
to think of which ones I can tell.
Sure, sure. But I want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so at 314-821-0850 or outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us, just send an email to family@kfuo.org. So any other stories or examples that you can use without jeopardizing any, making the rest of the family mad at you?
Well, you know, we can be so critical of our own children, and especially as they become parents or as they grow up. And in part, it's because we know, you know, I'm at that stage of life now where I can see things that I wish I would have done differently in parenting. I would like the younger people in my life not to make those same mistakes. And my mom was probably at that stage of life at one point, and I had come with the kids to visit for a couple weeks. I'd flown from Texas to the Chicago area where my mom and dad lived. And unbeknownst to me, evidently my mom had really been giving my sister grief about the state of her children's socks, because they had holes in them, and when I came home, my children, Jill's children, always had great, you know, clean white socks. And my sister had clued me into this, so my mom and I were having a conversation, and my mom said something like, oh, man, you know, your sister just doesn't take care of the kids as well as you do. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, my sister is such a wonderful mother. And my mom, sure enough, said something about the socks. I said, Mom, right before I come home, every time I come home, which is only once a year, all the kids get new clothes and new socks. So you're seeing new clothes and new socks. The grandchildren you see every day are running around, and they're wearing theirs out. That's what my kids look like right before we came home on vacation.
So socks are the telltale of how family life really looks, right?
Yeah, for my mom, evidently, they were in that moment. But the point was, my mom laughed, I laughed, my sister laughed. In that moment, we realized, you know, oh my goodness, you know, maybe we're judging things too much on the condition of the socks and, you know, not seeing the other ways. My sister was a wonderful parent who had her children in church, often by herself at times in those younger years, and was making sure that her children had the Word of God in their hands and in their hearts. And, you know, so it was, we laugh over that. But, you know, that's one of those times when I got to be a mirror for my mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, later on, when she was dying of Alzheimer's, she was very much a mirror for me in terms of my ability to be patient, my ability to help her remember over and over and over again when she would forget things over and over and over again. And so, you know, it's those hard times in life. God uses to teach us things, to refine our character traits. It's that refining fire that Isaiah talks about with God using in our lives, affliction making us better. And then God's promise also that he is going to walk through us when we're in those moments of affliction. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. I'm going to be there. So that's, you know, those things happen.
Great title for a book on this subject we should use. Holy Socks, Holy Life. Don't you think?
I think that's a great idea.
Holy socks are signs of a holy life. When I want to be the one who's doing the doing, and we kind of touched on this earlier, when I want to be the one who has, when I have high expectations, really high expectations of myself and think that things are going to be perfect, and I can't for one reason or another, what can God do with that? When I want to, you know, when I have those high expectations of myself or of my family, how does God use that?
Well, in my life, that's when God taught me how to pray. At a certain point in my life, I remember sharing with a friend who is still a good friend who had the gift of prayer, that I didn't think that God had given me that gift. I mean, I was happy to pray at meals and to, you know, have a prayer with the devotion or whatever, but I didn't think that God had really made me a prayer. And then I had a teenager who was having some real difficulties, and all my doing and trying to fix it wasn't working. And I had to give up and just go to God. I had to say, God, I don't know how to fix this. It's not working. Mm-hmm. I need your help. And I had to just go to him in a moment of complete emptiness and helplessness and ask for his help and ask him to guide me, ask him to shape this situation. And quite honestly, when I released like that, when I started just going to him in total, complete, helpless prayer, I think it changed me, and that ended up changing the situation, and, you know, things in our family really changed after that point, too. But he made me feel my helplessness, I believe, so that I would trust him.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that changes, as you said earlier, your perspective on the one you're trying to help too. It changes your relationship with them, with the child or with the spouse. My wife picked up on something pretty quickly when our son is screaming, and I'm trying to, you know, get him calmed down and so that we can feed him. And my wife is really good at it. I'm still learning, but she obviously gets a little more time with him right now and has picked up on all the nuances and his cues and things like that. It takes me a little bit longer to get him calmed down. And she said, you know, he probably has a pretty good sense of, you know, whether or not you're stressed or tense. And I was like, oh, that's a good point. You know, he picks up on those things. So when I can hand him to her and she's nice and calm, lo and behold, he calms down too.
Yeah.
And so in those relationships, I think our family, our children, our spouse can tell when we're tense and pick up on that. And that changes our relationship and our interactions.
Well, yeah. I mean, the only person, I was about to say the only person I can change is myself, but the truth is the only person God can change is me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true, yeah.
And when he changes me, that changes everything,
mm-hmm.
every relationship. And in marriage, in the tough times, over time, you hope that that refining fire, that those hard moments that God uses to knock off your rough edges or to smooth them, you hope that what happens is your ever increasing trust in God also teaches you gradually to begin seeking Him first instead of seeking Him last.
Here's the lifespan educator question. We understand as parents, as spouses, we understand or gaining understanding of this concept of how God can use these situations, these rough spots, these hard places to shape us. How do we help our children understand that? How do we help our children see that God works in the mundane things or in the rough times to bring them to where He wants them to be?
It's what I would call eavesdrop parenting. In other words, I think you speak it out loud. You speak it out loud to each other, and your children hear you speaking it out loud to each other. You speak it out loud to your friends about what you're learning, and other people hear it, or your spouse hears it. I really do think that talking about these things in the home is the only way that children can learn about it. And sometimes that's also revealing a little bit of yourself as weak and imperfect to your
mm-hmm.
children.
Sure.
Which they're going to get real soon anyway, so you might as well just be out front about it. And I do think it's putting the words to it.
I'm gathering it has a lot to do with how you talk about those difficult times, those hard times. We have, as new parents, have been duly warned by veteran parents, expert parents, that young children, especially toddlers and grade school children, are great listeners when you don't want them to listen. And they hear those things, they pick up on our behaviors, and they repeat those things that we say that we don't want them to repeat because they were listening when we didn't think they were listening.
Yeah. Especially embarrassing when you're in church work and people expect you to have a higher standard of that. Very humbling.
Right, right.
But the truth is we're real people, and they will be a good reflection of us, and of course, if they catch us in sin or wrongdoing, or we see that in the little mirrors of what they're mimicking, then we have to speak to that. But also, we can take advantage of that, you know, to really be very careful in what we try to model and ask for God's strength, but also, you know, use the words. Talk about our family forgives. Our family isn't made up of perfect people, but in this family, we know that that we can forgive each other because Jesus has forgiven us.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I think I probably already need to practice the words, Daddy set a bad example. Can you forgive him? Yeah. Well, final thoughts with about a minute left. Any final thoughts, Jill, for our families that are listening today on how God can use the hard places to shape our hard places in marriage and parenting?
Well, just that you don't have to go it alone. There's not only God to turn to, but there's other people who are also struggling, who would love to support and encourage and help you. And that those folks are often found in the family of faith. And Sometimes we think that people at church are perfect and we're the only ones with problems, but the exact opposite is true.
We are certainly made up of sinners. That's right. Well, Jill, it has been a joy talking with you today. I know I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. So thanks so much for spending some time with us today, Jill.
Thanks.
Coming up tomorrow on Faith and Family, we're going to talk with Pastor Ron Garwood about five things you can do to make your marriage stronger. Looking forward to talking with him about that. It's a new book from CPH in that series of the You Can Do It series. So looking forward to talking with Pastor Garwood. Coming up next right here on Worldwide KFUO, Moments of Assurance. So stick around and enjoy some great music and inspiration on The Messenger of Good News, Worldwide KFUO.